Happy New Year, everyone. It's Mike. What you're about to hear is part one of a two-part interview that I did with Carol Navarro about the song The Gypsy from the Back Here on Earth album. Now, you may remember that we started another two-part interview in the last episode with Glenn Nelson. That was about Gord's Gold. Well, this is another two-part interview. Our next episode after this one will be the second part of Glenn's discussion with me, and then the one after that will be the second part of the interview that you are about to listen to on The Gypsy. Hope you kept up with all that. Enjoy the show.
The first guest of the evening is truly a poet. He's an artist. He is a friend and an inspiration to anyone who I think who has ever played the guitar or tried to write poetry. Would you please welcome Gordon Lightfoot?
"Step inside my tent," said she. "I'd like to read your palm. Leave the dollar in the jar. This won't take very long. Leave the circus noise behind. Close your eyes. Relax your mind. I'll tell you if you should quit now or if you should go on." This is Carefree Highway Revisited, the show that celebrates Gordon Lightfoot's music song by song, a proud member of the FM Podcast Network. I'm your host, Mike Messner, and with me today is a fellow Lightfoot fan coming to us from the great state of Michigan, Carol Navarro. Carol, thanks for being on the show with me today.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me. And thanks for doing this podcast, because I love Gordon Lightfoot and I love talking about the lyrics.
Well, that's a big part of what we do here, and thank you for being a fan. Just to clear up, where exactly in Michigan are you?
Traverse City.
Tell me how you first got into Gordon Lightfoot's music, Carol.
Okay, well, first of all, I'll say, can a song save a life? Probably. And can a song change a life? And I would say, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that happened to me when I was tuning into a radio show out of Ann Arbor. It was a radio show called Michigan Movin'. It would come on 10 p.m. Sunday night and end at exactly at 10:22 p.m. I don't know why they picked that time, but they would play folk songs. I would tune in every Sunday, and then I heard the Canadian Railroad Trilogy.
Yeah, good one.
And that point on, I was hooked. And so I would tune in every week on Sunday night and wait for him to play a Gordon Lightfoot song. And so I was able to hear all the early Lightfoot songs. And I feel really lucky to have come to Gordon at that time. And I was about 16 or 17 years old, and I'm 71 now. So I have a few years behind me with Gordon. And it's the longest love affair I've ever had.
What a great way to describe it. And there's certainly a lot to love on all sorts of levels about Gordon the man and Gordon the musician. Did you get a chance to see him live? And if so, how many times? What was the venue like? Anything you care to say about that?
Okay, well, I lost count how many times, but, you know, as a young teenager, I was limited. So whenever he would come to Detroit or in that area, I would go see him. So I saw him at Masonic, Fox, Pine Knob, Meadowbrook. And I saw him at a shopping mall, 12 Oaks Mall, when I was 17 or 18. So the shopping mall was after hours. So in the little courtyard that they have, it was Gordon. And I only remember Gordon, but I've talked to Rick Haynes during the course of my travels. And Rick says he was there along with Red Shea. So there were probably about 30 people in this little courtyard mall after it closed down, and there was Gordon like 8 feet in front of me playing acoustic.
Wow. Oh, man.
But since then, fast forward, moved from Detroit to Traverse City, 40 years old, kind of going through a midlife crisis. And I decided that at this point, I'm going to meet Gordon Lightfoot. I saw that he was playing at Pine Knob. I hadn't seen them play in a number of years because I lived in Traverse City. Didn't think you could travel to Detroit, you know, or anywhere else to see him. That seems so far. But at age 40, I saw he was playing at Pine Knob, and I said, I'm going. So I t- talked to a girlfriend and said, you know, I'm going to meet him this time. Because when I was a teenager, I had tried to get backstage, of course, got shut down every step of the way. And we talked and I said, you know, if I pay somebody $25, you think I could get backstage? And she said, oh, no, no, Carol, $50. That almost anyone can do anything for $50. So I took my utility payment, as I was a single mom by this time, took my utility payment, stuck it in my shoe, drove downstate. And I don't think I ever sat down the whole show, the whole concert. I felt like I was in a board game, like Chutes and Ladders, where you roll the dice, you know, you go. And I ended up talking to a security guard, managers, and they kept redirecting me. Finally, I found myself at the stage door. There was a very nice gentleman there guarding the gate. He said, no, you can't get back here unless you have a pass. Well, how do I get a pass? Well, maybe, you know, you can get one from somebody that already has one. So this guy came up waving his pass. The guard said, no, it's too early. You can't get back here. So as the guy walked away, I said, hey, you want to sell that pass? Because I had $50. Well, he did.
Oh, wow.
And so I got backstage. And then at this point, it was like a dream. Because as the band members started filing out, I realized, oh, my gosh, it's been a while since I've seen them. Because they had gray hair at this point. That happens to all of us. But, you know, I thought, I'm doing it. And I went up to each band member, introduced myself, gave them my kind of sad little story, you know, I'm turning 40. I wanted to meet Gordon, blah, blah, blah. And thank you for all those years of music. And then they were all very kind, very nice. And then Gordon came out and I just froze. I was like, oh, my gosh, here he is. I can't do it. Well, across the room, Terry Clement waved to me from across the room, waved me over to him, and he introduced me to Gordon.
Oh, wow. And
like, oh, I've completed my life goal. This is like all I asked for in life, to meet Gordon Lightfoot. So I, of course, kind of fumbled over everything, but that was a game changer because then at that point, Barry King said, hey, there's some people back here you got to meet. They're from Traverse City. He introduced me to a man by the name of John Corcoran, who is quoted by Gordon as the fan who's been to most concerts. Mm-hmm. So, and then they invited me back to the hotel to kind of hang out, you know, at the afterglow afterwards. So John proposed to me, well, you know, Carol, you don't have to wait for Gordon to come to you. You go to him. So that began the journey of me traveling with John and his wife, sometimes just John, because his wife didn't always go. So it'd be John and I and his two little kids, ages 3 and 6. And we would traveled all over the country to see Gordon Lightfoot.
Oh, wow.
And they were a little confused at some point because they would be like, wait a minute. Peggy says it's okay for you to come without her and you're with her and you have the kids. So we kind of had fun with that. But it was all about the music and our devotion to this man who really helped us through life, literally. And so that's where I lost count on how many concerts that I've been to.
So you were really kind of the Lightfoot version of a deadhead then. Going around and seeing all of his shows.
Yes. And John and I like to think, we don't can't say that we did, but we came up with the term lightheads. Actually, I don't know if you know this, but John's daughter, the one that I used to travel with when she was 2 years old, grew up and did a documentary about Gordon. And the documentary is called Lightheaded, A Gordon Lightfoot State of Mind. And John produced it. And his daughter, Bailey, and son, Brady, wrote and did the editing and all the interviewing of the documentary.
Oh, wow. And is that documentary online? Is it available?
Yes. Okay. Yes. There's two of them out. One was the Canadian production, and this one was produced by John and, like I said, written and directed by his daughter, Bailey, and son, Brady.
So you really had a front row seat in more ways than one. Yeah. Of what the touring life was like. And I don't think I've ever had a guest on the show that had that kind of experience being, as you said, a lighthead. And that movie is one I'm going to have to check out because now I'm on vacation. So I have the chance to do that. I just finished giving finals today.
Yeah, it's kind of the version of a fan's life devotion. And the kids, John's kids did it because they grew up with Gordon's music and John's whole family became very well acquainted with Gordon personally, friends. So it was kind of from their perspective. Our dad dragged us all over the country to see Gordon Lightfoot concerts, you know, way past our bedtime. Mm-hmm. And this has been our life. It's been quite a ride.
Wow. I mean, I think you could probably write a book about your experiences as well, because it sounds like just a fascinating time to be alive and a fantastic experience.
I have to say that my only goal was to meet him once, and I would have been just happy with that. But mm-hmm. this is beyond what had happened, followed after that, beyond my wildest dreams. And I'll be forever grateful to the universe for that experience. And getting to know Gordon after he passed, his wife told me that he saved my letters.
Wow. So it sounds like you both impacted each other's lives to some degree.
Well, I'm not going to say that, but when she told me that, I was like, okay, I don't need anything else, any reward for the rest of my life. The fact that he saved my letters in his personal pile is like, that's just, I don't even know what to say about that.
Nothing to say except thank you to the universe, like you said. You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two.
Sanjay, look!
Yes, Zac? Wait, what's that thing you're holding up?
It's a time travel device. We can use it to go back to the past and watch movies.
But we already do that on our podcast, Oldie But a Goodie.
No. On previous episodes, we were pretending to time travel. Now we can do it for real.
Cool, so we can really go back to like the 80s or the 90s?
No, Sato, you're thinking too little. I mean, we could go really far back. Like we travel back over 100 years into the past.
Oh, but Zac, that's so far in the past. Those movies would be old.
Yeah, but, well, a show is called Oldie But a Goodie, so we should probably do old movies.
Oh, that's a good point.
That's right, folks. This year on Oldie But a Goodie, we're going back further than ever before.
Wait, who are you talking to?
We're starting in 1920s, doing one movie from that year, and then moving up to 1921. And we're continuing that until the year 1969.
Nice.
Join our time-traveling journey through cinema by subscribing now to Oldie But a Goodie, out wherever you get your podcasts.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Radio is so much different than it was in the 80s. We had it all. The music, the movies, the DJs, and morning shows. Back to the 80s Radio is a show from the 80s in podcast form. We bring the memories from that awesome decade back. Join Toscano and Chang every Friday as they take you on a ride back in time, sharing their experiences and laughs. Stop on by and discover some of the wacky things this crazy duo comes up with. They talk about it all, the good, the bad, and the ugly of the greatest decade. Don't miss the greatest 80s podcast in the world. Back to the 80s Radio.
Why did you want to talk about The Gypsy? I mean, this is a song that is buried way down in the Back Here on Earth album. It's not one, frankly, that I was very familiar with. What does that song mean to you in particular, Carol? Why did you want to talk about it today?
Well, I guess mainly because a lot of the other songs have already been chosen. But
okay, good reason.
Yeah, but I've followed his music from the beginning, and maybe it's because it was from the beginning that I chose that song, because like you said, not many people know that song. But it's the lyrics to me and his voice and his playing that is what Gordon was really all about. It's simple, it's not complicated, and it's for anyone to interpret. You know, we can try and figure out why did he write this, what was going on in his mind, but actually, for me, I think, or for anyone, you can take those words and apply it to yourself. I mean, he starts up, "Step inside my tent," said she. And I love the way he says, "said she," not "she said." So, mm-hmm. I mean, he's just the way he writes. It's so poetic, but he's setting the tone. He takes you back to a time when maybe when you're a little kid and you're going to the circus or the state fair or whatever, and you see the fortune teller or the gypsy. And if you're a little kid, oh, I want to go in. I mean, there's mystery, there's danger. What is the gypsy going to say? And maybe your parents wouldn't let you go. They wouldn't let you spend the money. Just the way he describes that first paragraph, leave the dollar in the jar, leave the circus noise behind, close your eyes, relax your mind. In that first paragraph, you're like, all of a sudden, you're just kind of in another place. The song is only, what, 2 minutes and 48 seconds long. And in that song, he takes you through a whole journey in just that short period of time.
The reason that I like it is the whole idea of the circus. I think it's my favorite song that mentions circuses. Uh-huh. And there have been several in the singer-songwriter category or genre that I've heard. Dylan mentions circuses many times. Joni Mitchell talks about circuses in Both Sides Now. And John Denver had a song called Circus. But this, I think, is my favorite because it does bring this idea of the fortune teller, and it does set it in the midst of a circus. And just from the very beginning, you're drawn in. That and the fact that the finger picking on this is just absolutely flawless. We'll come back to that and talk a little bit more about that later. Do you have any personal anecdotes about this song, or is this just one of the ones that really has meant a lot to you because you just enjoyed listening to it over the years?
Well, again, I can apply it, and many, maybe others can too. It's like when she says, step inside my tent, you cross a threshold. And it actually takes courage to go in and hear what the gypsy has to say. But I think the whole theme of the song is not really about the gypsy. You're going in when you cross that threshold, because she never really gives them a concrete answer, you know, diddly dum, diddly dee. There's never really an answer. So it's really facing yourself when you cross that threshold. You're really asking yourself those questions. And the song was written, what, when he was having writer's block and he was in Europe. So I'll tell you, if you should quit now or if you should go on, we all maybe kind of question, are we doing the right things at some point in our life? Did I pick the wrong career? Did I marry the wrong person? Should I have done this? Shouldn't I have done that? So, and I think we can all relate to the song and the brilliance of the metaphor, what he uses, her responses, deedly dum, deedly dee. She's not really giving him any answer, but yet we're saying, oh, you're so wise, you know everything. So we're kind of giving another deity or power to an object, to something else, to tell us what we need to do, when really the answer's inside us all along, if we take the time to reflect. I don't know if that makes sense or not.
It does. And I like the way you said that. And we're going to look into what she says to him and what she doesn't say to him as we go on here. Is there a perfect setting for you to listen to this song? I mean, something you're doing at a certain time of day, a certain place, or is this one that you could listen to absolutely anywhere under any circumstances?
Well, I think it's pretty much when I'm feeling reflective. Because it's hard to listen to that song with somebody else, especially if they're not into Gordon. And again, if there's a lot of noise going on, you get distracted from the lyrics. So really, if I'm alone in my car or in my office listening to Gordon, no other distractions around, because again, it's the words that I listen to.
Sure. This is a rarity for me in that I could listen to this song absolutely anywhere under any circumstances. And usually for me, as I've said in the past, for me, there's every song or many of his songs bring me back to a certain time and a certain place in my life, or when it really hit hard, the message of the song did. This one, I could probably take with me anywhere and listen to it, and it would be equally resonant. And that says a lot for the quality of the song and the quality of his writing at such a young age, because he probably was just around 30 when he wrote this. So the genesis of the song was written in London in June 1967. So Gordon had traveled to England in an attempt to overcome writer's block. He'd just come off of very successful tour. And that is really all I was able to unearth about the origins of the song. Do you have any information other than that?
No, I don't. I mean, there were so many songs. Whenever I would meet Gordon, I would tell myself, I'm going to ask him about this song. And again, as many times as I had talked to him, I would get tongue-tied. So I never did ask him about that song. Although one time I asked, I'm sure it's a silly question that he'd been asked many times before, but I said, you know, Gordon, how do you do it? Where do the lyrics come from? And I remember he kind of paused, kind of looked up towards the ceiling, and then he said, you know, they just come to me, which I don't know if that's true, because when I read this, he did kind of go over things over and over again. But the way that song, the way the lyrics read on that, I could just picture him sitting down at a table, just kind of spewing it out.
Well, he did say that there is a certain inner energy that makes one want to sit down at the table and get it done. He said that in the liner notes to Gord's Gold. And shameless self-promotion here, that was the episode that I've just released as the first part of my examination of Gord's Gold. Glenn Nelson and I did that, and it just came out yesterday. So you listeners probably want to tune in for that.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to Carefree Highway Revisited. We'll be right back after a word from a podcast partner or two.
Is that song really a cover? What instrument are they playing there? What do those crazy lyrics mean? If you're the kind of person who thinks about stuff like that, you're in luck, because I've got just the podcast for you. How Good It Is chooses a single song each episode and takes a dive into the story behind the song and the artist who made it famous. I'm Claude Call. You can find me in your favorite podcast software, or just point your browser to howgooditis.com. How good it is.
Hey, do you like classic albums? Technically, like, the, you know, the 20th century albums. Such as, like, Beatles, Led Zeppelin, Rolling Stones. I've only had Beatle episodes so far, however, I'll be doing more. But, welcome to my show, or rather, hey, welcome to... check out my show! all those years ago, a classic album podcast with the dipping sauce. As you can see, the George Harrison reference. I review classic albums, not of those, the likes of Beethoven, the likes of the Beatles and Rolling Stones, and like I mentioned earlier, or what have you. So yeah, check it out. It's every Monday. I do albums, conspiracies, songs, all that jazz. So just check it out. All Those Years Ago, a classic album podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
So let's go through the lyrics, which I know is your favorite part and mine too. Step inside my tent, said she, I'd like to read your palm. And again, said she, not she said. That's a nice twist on things. And it does make me wonder, who's seeking who out here? Is it he who is going to see a fortune teller, or does he happen to be walking along and she kind of pokes her head out of the tent and says, hey, come on, I have something for you. Who's taking the initiative here?
Well, what I picture with that first paragraph is him walking by the tent. And I think fortune tellers, maybe not psychics, they can't see the future. They can't really read a person's past, but their skill is reading a person. So he's walking by the tent and she has a radar for somebody who's vulnerable or ready. She can lure him into the tent with promise of whatever it is he's seeking at the time. I can give you your answers. So, oh, fortune teller. Okay, yeah, I'm all confused. I don't know what I should do next. Am I, you know, done here? Oh, well, just for the heck of it, why don't I do this?
Yeah, maybe kind of an impulse decision. Maybe not something, okay, I'm going to get out of my hotel room and get on the tube or on a bus or something like that and go from point A to point B. It just happens to be, okay, why not? And of course, he's got a lot on his mind. The state of his marriage and then also his career, because he's got a writer's block at that point. Leave the dollar in the jar. This won't take very long. Leave the circus noise behind. Close your eyes, relax your mind. And so what she's doing, in addition to being able to read him, she's also giving him a little bit of an oasis from the demands of being a professional musician. She's offering him a safe space for reflection. And it makes me wonder whether this is all metaphorical or whether he literally did go to a fortune teller. And I can see him doing either one. I don't know that he was a particularly superstitious man, but I can also understand that if he just didn't think he had the answers in himself at that particular time, I could see him going to get some sort of help or assistance, somebody that he can bounce some ideas off of. So do you think this is a metaphor? Do you think he actually went to one?
I don't know. I mean, maybe the description, because I almost feel like crossing into that tent and then the description of what happens once you go into the tent sounds like maybe he did go, and that the gypsies using kind of almost like hypnosis to get him to relax and put him in a different state of mind. So possibly he did just on a whim.
You know, I've had my tarot cards read a couple of times, and I can tell you that the person who did it told me to take deep breaths, relax, and put my hands on the cards with the idea that there was going to be something supernatural going on. Now, I don't necessarily believe in tarot cards being particularly prophetic these days, but when I was younger, I thought, why not? So it may have been that she's trying to just put him at ease. But whether or not he actually went there, I think that's one of those things. If you had asked him that question, I think he probably would have evaded it. Not because he's trying to be evasive, but because he just doesn't think it's as important as the overall message of the song.
Right. It's hard to tell if he actually went or not. You know, he kind of was always on a little different plane. I know he had a religious upbringing, church upbringing, so I think he was very spiritual. And there's different forms of spirituality, and going to a gypsy, going to a priest, going to a fortune teller, they're all kind of on different ethereal planes. So,
yeah, you're right. I'll tell you if you should quit now or if you should go on. We've already kind of speculated on, is she talking about quitting or going on with what? His marriage to Britta, we knew that would end. His career, well, we knew that was going to continue. So this is a time where he's got a lot going on, but I can only guess that those were the two things that he's alluding to. Should I quit my music career or should I quit my marriage? So he was at a bit of a crossroads here. I don't want to say midlife crisis, but I think it's probably fair to say that he was looking for answers, and maybe he should have been looking inside. Then I said, now, what do you see? And I'm not sure if she's looking through a crystal ball. Is she doing tarot cards? Is she reading tea leaves? Is she reading his palm? Probably his palm, because she had said, you know, I'd like to read that for you. And she said, deedle-dee-dum, deedle-dee-dee. Now, this feels like he thinks it's nonsense. Like either what she's saying is going in one ear and out the other, or she's telling him something he doesn't believe or he can't really understand. So deedle-dee-dum, deedle-dee-dee, it sounds like kind of a equivalent of blah, 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 gobbledygook. What's the meaning of this? Is she saying something that he just doesn't get, or does he really secretly not believe what she's telling him?
Well, I guess the way I see it is, years ago, I attended a tracking school based on these books that I read, where a young boy was taught the skill of tracking by an Apache Indian. So whenever he and his friend, these two young boys, would go to this Apache leader and ask him a question, he never answered them directly. For example, how do squirrels build their nest? So instead of saying, well, they take leaves and sticks and this is how they put them in the tree, he would say, go ask the squirrels. So he never gave them a direct answer. And I think they call that coyote teaching or fox teaching. I can't remember what it was. But whenever they would ask him a question, it would always be a very indirect answer. So it was up to them to go find the answer themselves. So he would direct them go ask the squirrels. Then they would spend hours and hours watching squirrels till they figured out how the squirrels made their nests by out of sticks and leaves. And so when she said deedly dum, deedly dee, I feel like that's kind of the same thing. But she didn't answer the question directly, but she still has them kind of hooked in or kind of engaged by that kind of response. Well, what does she mean by that? So he continues to ask her questions. He continues to get kind of the same response, but he doesn't leave at that point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he did leave at that point, we wouldn't have a song.
Right.
It would be just, I'm frustrated. You've ripped me off. I'm going back to where I was. That wraps up the first half of my interview with Carol Navarro on The Gypsy. You'll hear the second half of this interview 2 episodes from now. Until then, run for the roses, but don't forget to stop and smell them.